This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.
This is Adam Matas with DNVR, the DNVR Bar, and the DNVR Nuggets podcast, and you're listening to The Whole Show with Brady Hull.
Some call him genius, legend, ladies man, the best to ever observe the game. We want to keep him humble, so we call him Sean. This is Keeling Me Softly with Denver Post columnist Sean Keeler.
21 minutes after the 1 o'clock hour, welcome back in. It is time for Keeling Me Softly with the one and only Sean Keeler with the Denver Post. Sean, there's a lot going on right now, man. We got Nikola Jokic making Nuggets fans feel a lot better than they did a week ago, saying he's going to finish his career with the Nuggets. You've got LeBron watch. You have this Seth Wickersham story, this novel of a story about Sean Payton, and you know, days before the kickoff of the AFC Championship, and also a bunch of stuff surrounding it. My goodness, man. And the Rockies might be, maybe not good, but they're fun.
They're fun. They're fun guys. The term I used earlier this season for the White Sox, they're watchable. Like, you just want something watchable and not terrible. So they are, I think they're on a pace to lose 95 or 94
Pretty good.
We said anything under 100 was going to be great. You didn't mention Big 12 Media Days.
Big 12 Media Days.
That was the other one. And I think those are the major bullet points now. I'm just getting back from vacation now, and I'm not quite, as I told your producer, I don't think my brain's quite shifted into hitting. You know, in our world, you got to hit the ground running.
Yeah.
The ground is running, and I am not.
It's,
so I look like I'm on an escalator, running uphill, a downhill escalator right now. It's kind of how I would describe my mode.
Well, I'm assuming you're gearing up to go to Pac-12 Media Days. Oh, wait, that's not happening. So, yeah.
No, I like you, but no.
Okay, Sean, you tell me. You're a reporter. You're a columnist. You go. You get quotes, and I mean, you do a great job of it. I'm a radio guy. I take the stuff you write and I pick it apart, Sean. Not yours, of course. But when you go to these media days, how do you feel about the Pac-12 not having a media day? Or is it a big deal to you, or do you view it as, this is a great opportunity to preview the season, talk about the issues surrounding not only the conference but all of college football? How do you view the Pac-12 not having a media day?
I mean, me personally, it doesn't ruffle my feathers because, like a lot of legacy media, we're having to look at how we do things a little differently on a couple of levels. I don't think, objectively, if I were a fan, I wouldn't love it just because I think you need all the forward attention and PR and spin that you can control that you can get. These things are just basically, I mean, traditionally, I couldn't tell you. I mean, the Big 8 used to have a Skyrider. So the Big 8 used to fly people because the late, great Chuck Ninus, who lived around here, became a friend late in his life, and I certainly admired his work for years and years. When he ran the Big 8, they had something called the Skyriders. Are you familiar? Well, you're probably not familiar with
it. No.
Like, to start the season or during preseason camps in August, and I could be screwing this up entirely because it was part of my youth, but it was – I'm sure there's someone like somewhere Terry Fry is shaking his fist at me going, no, I was on one of those. They would fly people from campus to campus. The Skyriders Tour is what they'd call it. Like, leagues paid for this kind of attention, and specifically with legacy media because there was no internet. You had to quote the newspapers and TV stations and radio because that's all you had. So the philosophy to preseason was always any attention is better than none at all. So, yeah, I don't think it's great. I don't think it's catastrophic. You'd want some. I mean, basically, it's about getting ESPN and Fox's attention, to be blunt, and CBS to some degree too. At least of the big three, NBC certainly has some Big Ten games of the networks that are paying for this stuff, and where your business partners are. It's a curious decision. I don't know that it's a fatal one, but I don't know that's one that I would have made. I would think you would have won a flying start and to have as many people to this as possible and to make a show of it. But maybe a lot of legacy media were involved. basketball. Although that doesn't really matter anymore post-pandemic. You could have an online Zoom thing, which wouldn't be great, but you can repackage this in a lot of ways that are cost-effective that maybe don't require travel. But it is unusual, especially when the Big 12 goes so dang early, which I presume is so they can have the facility or just to be the first out of the gates, because any college football stuff before the All-Star game, baseball All-Star game, to me is stupid.
Sean Keeler joining us. It is way early, yeah, for the Big 12, but having the media days, of course. Now, Coach Prime gearing up for a very important season. Sean, we were talking about it earlier, kind of just going through the schedule. Now we're getting closer to that time. I just have this, well, depending on who you ask, if it's a bad feeling or a good feeling, I have a bad feeling for Buffs fans that this is not going to be, at the very least, even a bowl season.
Well, they're an interesting case. Because really, you hate Prime, you hate, back to the haters. No, I'm fascinated by them on a number of levels, because their schedule and their defense and their history, well, the history we kind of don't know because everything is up and down, up and down. Their roster is better than what people predict their record will be. How does that sound? And so I'm trying to split the difference where I don't know that it's a 9-win team. I don't think it's a 3-win team. I think you and I have constantly sort of towed the very boring middle ground of, well, they could win 4-7. I haven't moved off that, and I haven't moved down. And I read Bill Connolly, who's just strictly looking at it as a mathematical proposition at ESPN.com. And he's in the computer, say they'll win, I think, 4.5 or 4.6 games. And, well, that sounds about right. But he's like, but I love Danny Scudero. I love the kid from Miami. I love the kid from Tennessee. I love the Brendan Marion hire. And the things that are subjective that the computer, that AI, cut me off, AI. The things that AI can't see and doesn't care about, we see and we know. Danny Scudero is a good player. I will wager you a beverage of your choice that Danny Scudero will be at least a second team Big 12, all Big 12 player if he's healthy. Like, he's really good. So, I mean, there are pieces there, even if everything is so kind of screwy and different and unique and transient. You know, they just don't have Travis and Shadur. And that's the thing, is you keep going back to that time and again. And I think what Deion Sanders has to prove, not, and doesn't care what I think, or he does a little, but what he has to prove to people who aren't me, who are critical or dubious of where they're going, is can they do this without two Hall of Fame retired jersey players, right? And let's not go down that road again. But Travis, undoubtedly one of the best players, if not the best player they've ever had. Can you do this without that frontline talent? I think this season's going to say a lot that way. Because there's a lot of, the Big 12 is still pretty gray. That's the good and bad about that league, is I think other than Texas Tech and maybe BYU to some degree, Utah has some continuity, but you've got a new head coach there for the first time in decades. So how is that going to go? I mean, there is always an opportunity to surprise in the Big 12 because there is real parity there. And maybe you win some of those close games, you can do that. I think the question becomes, very simply for CU, is can you score 30 points a game? Because that really has been their benchmark for winning and losing, and you needed an NFL quarterback and a top two draft pick to make that happen consistently. And then when you lost that, it didn't. You played your backups last year, and it looked like a team of backups who could have moments but couldn't finish. Which one of those are you? And the truth is probably in the middle. Let's be really boring and split the difference and say they win six. I think, it could be kind of a minor bowl team, and the idea that you build on that with Julian Lewis is not out of the realm of possibility. I don't think it's a much higher ceiling than 7 wins, though. I think that would be a lot of Kool-Aid sipping. But there's talent. It's just a matter of whether there's coaching and whether there's the ability to finish those close games, that better coaching and better strategy will help you to do, which clearly, according to Julia Lewis, they didn't have last year. I'm sure you saw it.
Yeah, quote. I wanted to get. Like, yeah, what? What is that? Because you know, when I hear that, we were out there just in the phrase he used was, you know, it can be used for other things too, Sean. Free balling, I think, is what he said. We're just kind of free balling it out there, just kind of running around.
Different. That means something different than stocks. When they come from the World Cup, when the Tartan Army comes to Boston, freeballing means something completely different.
Yes. So you got him saying, you know, that's kind of what we did last year. And I think, okay, that would be all well and good if you have a new coach for this year. And now you're looking back going, wow, just how bad was it? But that was under Coach Prime's leadership that they apparently didn't have a real clear plan on offense.
Yeah, it was under Pat Shurmur's leadership, which
right.
goes back to
yeah.
something, yeah, or lack thereof. We CU's offensive coordinator in 2024 plays for the Cleveland Browns now. It was always Shador. and when Sean Lewis pushed back two and a half, three years ago, he got out. They went, nope, it's me or him. They went, yeah, it's him. So bye-bye. This will be a little different, maybe. It certainly looked like they were making it up as they went last year offensively. And I think one of the things that we can't this year clearly, I mean, you call it an excuse, but call it a fact. You know, Deion Sanders wasn't around at this time last year very much. And it seemed like to a lot of people, like I heard over the summer, as a few people going, dude, he wasn't there in June. Like, you have to be there. You know, July is yours. And yet you'll see, you know, between like spring ball and media day, he was dealing with the cancer stuff.
And he's
fun and good, but that is not insignificant in terms of the time, the months lost. And we've talked about this last year. They look like a team that had 2 months missing, you know, at times. And it's easy to point to that and say, well, there was your gap and that's just a life thing. And that's not anything you can control, But B, you don't have that now. So I guess the good and the bad is they could always kind of lean on that and say this was always going to be a lost year. He didn't say that last year because he won't say that. But you got the feeling that it could be, and then ultimately it was. And once it got going bad, you just couldn't quite square it away. Iowa State notwithstanding. But you don't have that this year. So if they're 1-4, which I don't think they will be, or they're 1-5 or something, you can't look at that and go, well, our coach was getting chemo, our coach was doing this and wasn't around. Everyone is around. Everyone is present. Deion Sanders is present. Everyone has been really, really hands-on with this. Also because they want to get 3-9 out of their mouths, and they have a new boss. The guy ultimately, you know, doing Deion Sanders' job, no one does Deion Sanders' job of you, but the person who technically is supposed to do it is a different guy. And it's not the guy who hired you. And in any normal situation, when you're a 3-9 football coach who makes $10 million, I mean, let's be real about that, and the financial aspect of this, if you have another year like that, your new boss is going to wonder what you're worth to this, and he's going to ask questions that you're not going to like. And we know we know anything about the answers. He's not going to take questions he doesn't like. So, you should have had a drum roll ready for that. You should have had the
come on, Michael.
Come on. Yeah, no, it's fine. We're all getting back out of vacation mode with this. So, I mean, I don't know if we want to go down this rabbit hole today because there are so many rabbit holes.
There's a
right
lot.
Now in front range sports, but they are fascinating to me. I mean, they really are, because I think it's sort of a talent versus coaching thing. And for a Sanders team to be good, the talent has to be so good, as it was 2.5 years ago, has to be so good that you can basically overcome yourself. And it wasn't last year. It's better by all accounts now. And we'll see, I mean, talent-wise, we'll see if the coaching has made up for, I mean, it'd be hard to make up any worse than Pat Shurmur. I think we're just presuming that anything better than a negative is a positive, even if it's a net neutral. So, yeah, I mean, is that worth 2 wins? It might be, and then you're at 5. I think the question, we're going to bring the Rams into this, the question for CU and CU is largely the same, in that they both could go 5-7 if
sure.
you do the math
yeah.
with that schedule.
Yeah.
And I would ask you, in both cases, is that good enough? CSU, I would say, yeah, because it's year one, and I've had people immediately, in response to the stuff I've written recently, say, no, Jim Mora's got to be a 7-win. We got him to be a 6-7-win, 8-win coach right away. And then, Dion, it's year four, and you're 5-7. You go, yeah, we improved, but.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, on the Rams side, Sean, I look at it and say, yeah, expectations might be to be a bowl team, but if you're not, you're not firing anybody. You know, with Colorado, I didn't think we'd ever be to this point where it's like, if it's a really bad season, yeah, there's a pretty big, significant chance that you move on from Coach Prime at the end.
No, the money. I mean,
what's the buyout? They can't buy him out, can they?
So, yeah, it's a 36. It might be at like 20. I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but it's in the 20s. Like, they don't have $28 million lying around. They just don't. Like, let's just be real about this. And Dion knows this, and this was all baked in. There are a lot of people with power who go into something without a plan. At least without a financial plan. I will never accuse Deion Sanders of not having a good financial plan for how he handles things this way. So, yeah, I mean, would 5-7 get Deion fired? No. I don't think it would. And are you going to run coordinators again? Yeah, probably, but he'll do that anyway. Like, it's the least safe position in football is to be Deion Sanders' offensive coordinator.
Well, and Sean,
because
he's
you're the first one to go.
And his new offensive coordinator, Brendan Marion, he has been all over the place. Every single year, he's somewhere else. So, I mean, the odds of him sticking around with the Buffs, whether they succeed or don't succeed, I wouldn't bank on it.
And I get now, I'm getting different people who I like. Well, many of whom I'd say have 2 out of 3 who like Brendan okay. And then I'll get someone saying, yeah, he burns hot and fast, you know, which is the Jim Harbaugh code for, you'll get on your nerves. And I went, oh, that's going to be good. That's going to be great with Deion. That'll work out wonderfully. And maybe that stops. Maybe this is an environment where whatever doesn't suit him well, or his run people wrong, doesn't do that here. They certainly have doubled down with him and with the personnel staff on the high school recruiting front. I mean, they've got, I think, the number 3 class in the Big 12 right now. I mean, they're acting like they've got a 3-year plan. They may not have one, but they're acting like it. And this is the – and I'm positive that not just the thing of last year and Lipton's has become an entire Buffs combo again. How do we always do that? You and me.
It kind of works that way. Yeah.
It's how it works. Yeah, but he definitely had to go to Fernando Lobo and say, at worst, here is my 3-year plan for your next $30 million investment, as you would with any boss or any supervisor. So I think they have one. It's just a matter of how well they act on it, you know, this year on the field, and we'll see.
Yeah, Sean, next week I want to get to, if you have time, or maybe even later this week, we're out of time now, but I would love to get your thoughts on the Joker stuff, the LeBron stuff, and Sean Payton as well, because I thought that article, it was very long. There was a lot of things that I was kind of like, okay, I'm kind of bored, but then, bam, I would get interested again. So, fascinating stuff.
What was your favorite part of the Payton article? What was the most head-scratching? Because it was all things. It was literally a movie.
I think probably the Belichick thing, I know that one stands out. The fact that Sean would be saying, hey, I would totally be willing to take, you know, to take sidecart to Bill Belichick so he could get his record. But then I asked the question, I'm like, what if that happened? What if ownership actually went along with Sean Payton and Belichick was good? What would you do? I mean, does he stay as Sean Payton, the OC, is going to fire the head coach? I mean... That one was a head scratcher, and then the 4th and 11 going forward on the idea of going forward on whatever that was it 4th and 11 on their 11, own 38 yard. So those were the two big ones. A lot of fascinating things, though, for sure.
Yeah, there is. And the short answer with LeBron, we're not in the top 3, and I told you we weren't going to be in the top 3.
So
I think we talked about it last week. I'll refer to what we talked about that. They're going to be at the table. They're not at the head of the table. I'd be shocked if they were.
Yeah, I was right here with you, man. Sean, appreciate it, my man, and we'll catch up with you soon.
All right, sounds good. See you. Thanks.
Sean Keeler, Denver Post. That's Keeling Me Softly. 40 minutes after the hour. Michael, yeah, the buyout for Coach Prime. That's fascinating. if you fire him before December 31st, not that we're even there, but if you did, you'd have to. It's $20 million?
I think it's officially 26.6, but
oh my $10
million this year, $6 million the year after that, $4 million in 2028. But I see another source that says $26.6 million.
That's insane. That's insane. But smart by Coach Prime. 41 minutes after the hour, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.